Moving on, let's see now. So this is an interesting story, maybe a bigger story than I'm giving it credit for here. But the DFW a controller slash supervisor who refused to grant an emergency request from an airliner.
Yeah,
Oh, man.
Just inexplicable from what we know about this. First of all, this is something August involving a an American Airlines jet with passengers aboard. The crew told the controllers that they had an emergency. They used the word on the frequency. They had an unknown amount of fuel aboard. They wanted an expedited landing against the flow at Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport. The controllers kind of hemmed and hawed and basically denied the request for the expedited against the flow landing.
The supervisor told the controller on the station to put him in the flow for runway 31C, and the straight in direct shortest route to the ground for the American Airlines crew was runway 16, Charlie. So instead of getting on the ground in just a couple of minutes, they had to go with the flow. And anybody that's been into DFW knows that even if you short circuit that a little bit, that's a lot longer way in than the direct when you're coming from the
Right.
opposite direction.
Now, to
Dave,
the go ahead, Amy.
I was going to say, did you guys listen? I listened closely to the commentary the other day and the actual tapes, and there were a couple of interesting things I heard.
Yeah, go ahead.
One, it was clear that they wanted to be on the ground at DFW.
Yeah.
Because the second controller who handled them actually said, if you need to get on the ground that fast, I can offer you a closer airport. But he would not give him 17C, the runway, which was very, very interesting. Little tidbit that just kind of squeezed in there. If you need to get on the ground that fast, I can offer you a closer airport. And of course, the pilots said, no, we need to land at DFW.
Well, you're absolutely right, Amy. The other airports were available. It's not known, and they didn't go into detail on the frequency if they had an operational issue with respect to choosing a different airport. By the time, I forget which aircraft type this was. It was a 75 or an MD-80 or what it was.
75.
It was a 75.
75, yeah.
But by the time they figured out that they had a fuel quantity issue, they might have had some other issues or might have suspected they've had some other issues. And choosing DFW, longer runways, better support facilities, and clearly being one of their stations in support of any passenger needs after the landing is probably not that bad a decision on their part. They have, not to defend an airline crew, but they have a lot more going on than just flying the airplane.
I
Yeah.
agree with you, Jeb. I think that the problem was that I personally felt like they weren't assertive enough with the
Right. I don't.
controllers.
I we're in 100% agreement.
Yeah. I mean, that may be the lesson for those of us who fly everyday airplanes. The whole, th and this is a lesson, and I've never had to use this lesson, but a lesson that I learned early on from both instructors and other, pilot mentors was, don't use it lightly, but if you're in a jam, you say, I'm declaring an emergency. And the thing I was taught is don't be kind of vague about this. Don't be kind of
Right.
hesitant. Be really say, Cessna 123, I'm declaring an emergency. All right. And once you've done that,
That's all you have to do.
my understanding is that the controllers are anxious to help you, but there are certain things that they can only do once you say the words.
Right.
And so once you say, I'm declaring an emergency, they suddenly have a lot more leeway to help you out. And to the FAA's credit in this Dallas-Fort Worth situation, from what I've read, that supervisor was the only person in the world who thought who wasn't horrified by what happened here. I mean, I heard stories that you know, other controllers instantly were horrified by this. The FAA pretty quickly came down and said that we got to do some training here. I don't know. It's a terrible situation. Unfortunately, it didn't turn out badly, but I get the feeling it's an isolated thing. And
in my experience, and I've been fortunate to only really have to declare an emergency for real once. My experience, this behavior by the DFW controller or the supervisor, I should say, is in fact an anomaly. But anytime one of our listeners or anybody else might find themselves in a situation where they have to declare a for real emergency, all you have to do is declare it, make sure it's communicated to ATC, and do what you need to do. In one situation, the situation I'm speaking of, I was cleared to land on a specific runway, and I didn't really have a chance to get into it with them, but I was going to land any damn where I wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a matter of which runway or anything else. If they had to reposition the equipment or whatever, that was their problem, not mine. You're the guy in charge. It's your butt in the sling. The controller's chair is not moving nearly as fast as yours is.
Right.
That's right. And, you know, there's a lot of forgiveness that goes with this. In terms of whatever rules that you may worry about that you're about to violate, in the attempt to get your butt back on the ground alive and intact in a tight situation. So, it's not something, as everybody says, to be done lightly. But once you utter those words, then the world changes, and it's supposed to change in your favor.
Yeah. It's a good thing to have in your bag, and, anyways, so that's, maybe that's it, everything to be said about that particular subject.
Actually, I think that the some of the final chapters on this have not yet been written. I can't say a whole lot more about it than that, but I hear some things through the grapevine that maybe this one's not over with yet.
Oh, really? All right.
Yeah,
and I might add one more thing, which is don't be afraid to use the word Mayday either.
Exactly.
It jumps up and it gets everybody's attention. Mm-hmm. Don't be subtle if you've got a problem.
Yeah. If you have a good faith belief that you're in danger, you are entitled to use these terms and get this service. And
nice and firmly three times, and by the time you get to the end of the third Mayday, everybody within earshot on the frequency is going to be on your side.
Yeah,
misses it.
Right. One other point, too, is that very rarely will there even be someone asking you a detailed question about what happened. In my example, I had a very rough, I had a partial engine failure, put the airplane down without a scratch, talked to the airport management, talked to the fire rescue personnel, talked to the controllers, and they're like, hey, good job, thank you. Do I have any paperwork to fill out? Nope, you're good to go.
Nope, that's right.
Have a great day.
Yeah.
You know, be sure and clean the seats, but, have a great day.
Clean the seats, change the underwear, new jeans, and you're off and running.
One thing we did want to touch on is Amy hasn't been with us for a while. A couple of episodes, we had a lot of fun talking for a few minutes each about our earliest flight experiences, you know, sort of what motivated us to learn to fly and what were those, you know, if there's anything particularly special about those first few flights. So, Amy, can you tell us a little bit about your earliest flight experiences? When and why did you first learn how to fly?
Well, if we're going to stick to learn how to fly, then we'll start with that. my father learned how to fly between 1965 and 1966, and somewhere in there, I started flying in the back of the airplane with him. I can remember my grandmother's first flight. I can remember being 5 years old and holding her hand and saying, it's going to be just fine.
That's great. Yeah.
I can remember taking the yoke of the Aztec and going through a takeoff sequence with my dad without ever being able to see over the top of the instrument panel. So that was probably my first IFR 00 takeoff, so to speak. But I began my flight lessons at about 15 and a half years of age. And my flight instructor, God bless her, is still around. She doesn't live very far away from me.
What's her name, if you're willing to share?
Her name is Robley Grelick.
Uh-huh.
And hello, Robley, if you're out there.
What airport was this all at?
This was all at Page Field in Fort Myers, Florida.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So,
okay.
I learned to fly in a Cessna 152 and then up to a 172 is what I soloed in and went ahead on with my stuff. And I think one of my most memorable flights was a cross-country I did where I got to Sebring, and I looked down, and there was some fog down there, but there was also a lot of runway, it seemed like. So I just landed on the part of the runway that didn't have fog. I thought that was fine.
Okay.
I can remember being very annoyed that there was no one there at that time on a Sunday morning to sign my logbook. So I had no evidence
Slackers.
Of having made it there.
It's hard to find good help.
But wait a minute, now, is there a punchline to this story? It was, in fact, an airport, I'm hoping.
It was, in fact, an airport. In fact, it's a very busy airport. You have your light sport aircraft expo there now every year. But at the time, there was nothing but the triangled runways and a trailer on the field. That was it. The trailer was the FBO in those days. So anybody who remembers that,
and the racetrack.
Let us know. Your memories of Sebring.
Yeah, see, that's what I was afraid you were going to tell us, is that what you actually ended up landing on was the racetrack or something like that.
And, No. The racetrack wasn't there in those days.
Ah, okay.
It was still part of the airport.
Very cool. Very cool. It's really fascinating to listen to people's first flight experiences. There's so much variety and so many interesting stories there. That's terrific.